It's Wednesday, June 4th, 2008, and you're listening to episode 102 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 1 hour and 1 minute. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
And my name is Chad.
And my name is Peter Prostate, reminding you to keep me healthy.
Peter no. Prostate likes a very different kind of one-finger salute than what you normally give on the interstate. So
it's not so much of a salute as it is a massage.
You guys are gross.
All right, so we have kind of a weird cast today because
this is definitely a first for us with this
particular threesome here on Fear the Boot.
I haven't been on a cast Fear the Boot episode with Chad since 2007 January.
Yeah, since you were in town. Absolutely. Man, yeah, you have a good memory for dates. Assuming you're right.
I don't even know who you are. That's how bad my memory is.
Well, I don't ever pin me down to the date. I can get the month. And the only reason I remember that is because it was such a significant event in my life, being there and meeting right. the rest of you.
Okay, I can understand that now. I was kind of confused, but now it makes sense. But anyways, we got John is in Hawaii right now. He actually sent me a text message from the Missouri. The battleship Missouri.
Yeah.
And Matt is out of the country in Wales or something like that, after which he's going to be in
wasteland. That's where he's at.
Yeah, he does hazmat stuff. So he's out of the country and then he's going to be in Tennessee for several months. Luke has elected to take a 1 or 2 month break just to kind of get some things straightened out in his life and relieve some burnout.
He's going
to
re-lukeify himself.
Yes, he needs to fill up his Luke levels again.
Tex can't get. He apparently downloaded the new version of Skype and can't get that working. So we have me, Chad, and Chris here on the mics today.
Yes.
But you know what? This is a damn good cast, so we're going to go ahead and run with this. Before we started recording, Chris, you were regaling us with a story that absolutely needs to be repeated on the air. We have talked in the past somewhat, and I think this is a topic that's generally beaten to death in the role-playing game community in a whole, which is how do you get the girls to game?
What are girls?
But you had a great story on how not to do it.
Yeah, this was not me who did this. This was someone from my former group. But he said somehow he had gotten a number of women who were interested in gaming. They wanted to try D&D because they knew that he was a gamer and wanted to give it a go. And so he was happy to oblige them. Although I think, you know, after him telling the story, I think that deep down he may have been a bit, you know, put off by the whole thing. I don't know if he just didn't like them as a gender at the time or what exactly his problem was. But he decided to, he went through the whole process. He sat him down, he did character creation, walked him through that whole process, kind of explained the rules, mechanics, and got everything going. And they were all female characters. And he described them being on the edge of this field, and they were standing on the field, and he kind of just, you know, he really got into it and gave all kinds of descriptions. And then put in, he said, in the field in front of you is a dragon. And he says, what you need to do is you must get yourself past this dragon to the other end of the field where lies the shopping mall. And he went on to describe the looks that he got from all of them as he did this, because he was, you know, playing into the whole stereotypical thing that these were girls and really all they really cared about was shopping, and this was all they wanted to do.
They didn't want to defeat the dragon, they wanted to get the sale on shoes.
Exactly, they wanted to get there, get to pay less because it was a BOGO.
Now, I'm curious, how did this play out? Do you know anything about how the game progressed? Did they play through it? Did they just...
I don't think it progressed at all at that point. I think that he got a round of disgusting looks, and then when he didn't drop the joke, basically, he just was dead on serious that this was exactly what they had to do. I think that their desire to play, you know, kind of went away. Maybe it's, you know, it's kind of an ass move, really, but
It amuses me, so I'll accept it.
But it, you know, so it, yes, definitely not the way to do things.
I was hoping Christian would stick around because he's got some really funny stories. He just got back from a camping trip where they had a fish fight.
Ew.
Wow, a fish fight?
Yeah. They were fishing. And so someone would catch with like a fairly large, like 16-inch bass, and then just throw it at the person next to them, still alive, still flopping.
I actually, you know, and I don't want to get into another gaming story, but tying everything to gaming as I want to do in the 20 plus years I've been, or 25 years I've been doing so. One of my most memorable camping trips involved me going through the Steve Jackson Sorcery series of Choose Your Own Adventure books, which, by the way, are probably, wow, in my opinion, the best choose your own adventure fighting fantasy series of books that were produced, although technically they were not fighting fantasy.
Now, were they the choose your own adventures that was like the ones for kids where it's just go to page 15 or go to page 16, or was it the one where you had the character sheet and you had items you had to track?
No, that was Lone Wolf.
No. It was the Lone Wolf, also very good series of books. And I went through a chunk of those, but no, it was the latter, Chad. It was you made a character, very simple rules mechanics. You used 2d6, and yeah, you still had to jump to various entry numbers in the book. But if you encountered creatures or whatever, you'd have to, of course, fight them or whatever. And when you created your character in these books, you could create either the warrior type of character or you could create the wizard. And what was unique about this system was that their magic system for the wizard was actually very good. And because what it had you do is all the spells in the book had three-letter codes. So you could go and as a person try and memorize as many of those codes as possible. And then when you got to a combat encounter, it would give you like four different spell options of what you wanted to cast. And you could, of course, if you recognized one of the codes and you realized that this one would work, you could cast that spell. Or you could try and cheat and say, oh, I'm just going to cast this spell, even if you didn't know if it was a regular code or not. But the book would purposely put ones in there to catch you in the process of cheating. So if you picked a code that didn't exist, thinking it was an actual spell, you'd go to that entry and it would say basically your spell backfires and the creature, you know, bites your face off.
You really want to stop people from cheating. You have to do it further down. Find out combinations that are impossible. So by the time you've reached the point of it's caught you cheating, you are so deep into the book that on your next time through, you dare not cheat.
Exactly. Well, and that's what it would do, is that it would burn you so bad that if you survived, it would teach you, you know, don't cheat, man. Don't cheat the book. So, but anyway, it was a series of four books, and three of them were eventually turned into D20 Adventures because they were so popular. But it was a great series of books. And you can actually, I think, find them online now. And run through them.
I have a little, it's like a little two books that's in a little sleeve, and they're choose your own adventures, but with the character sheet and all that. And it's Fritz Lieber's Lankmar when TSR was putting out those games, and it's Fawfet and the Grey Mouser. And well, you'd have two people. One person would take one book and another person would take another book. And it's the two main characters of the Fritz Lieber Lankmar books, which is Fawfet and the Grey Mouser. Verse, and the other book would be the Thieves Guild. The other person would play an entire Thieves Guild, and the two books would like sync up. They were different, but they would sync up, and you go to different pages and do different things. And it looks so cool. I can't find anybody to freaking play this with me. I really want to play it, and it's pissing me off. And I found this book for like a dollar at this huge book fair we have here in St. Louis, and I have looked for it online. I cannot find this for the life of me. Now, of course, somebody's going to come onto the forums tomorrow and say, oh, look, they reprinted them all, and here's the whole catalog, and you can get them right here on Amazon. But, yeah, I haven't been able to find them at all, and they're really cool. In fact, I have another one that I picked up at the same book fair for a dollar, and guess what? It only has one of the two books. So I can never play that, even if I do find somebody to play it with, which just enrages me further.
You lack imagination.
Yes.
I remember TSR did do that, and I bought one of the books, and I ran into the same problem as you had, is that, and it wasn't far from the Grey Mouser, but it was just, I don't know, it was two guys or whatever, but I couldn't get anybody to play with me either, and it was so frustrating, because it looked so damn cool. Yeah. And they did that for Battletech, too. It was Nova Game Designs, I'm pretty sure that's who the company was, and they had, you basically would buy the book for the mech. So they had books for the Griffin, the Warhammer. I think they had had a Wasp. And each page had what the mech warrior would see in his cockpit. Okay? Mm-hmm. And so you would make your... And this is really, really reaching to try and remember how to describe how this worked. Yeah. But you would make choices in the book as to what you wanted to do, and your opponent, having the other book that you would be fighting against, would also make his choice, and then you'd compare or something, and then you turn to various pages and see who came out on top in that particular, you know, fire exchange or whatnot. Mm-hmm. But it was very interesting. And those I know for sure you can find online still. They still exist in some way, shape, or form out there. But
well, that's cool because I can actually go out and buy those. Now I just need to go out and buy a freaking friend who will play these with me.
You haven't tried too hard. This is the first I've even heard of these books.
Dan, will you play this with me?
I will, damn it, Chad. If you bring these books over, woo-hoo, I will play these books with you.
The cover art was very nice. The interior art, not so much. I think I have the Griffin book, I think, is one I ended up buying.
The half book I have is like some, it's actually a Mongol story. It's like some Mongol guy, and it's like so-and-so of the north, and I have no clue who his opponent is because I don't have the other book.
Lothar the Hill People?
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's Conan the Librarian.
Don't you know the Dewey Decimal System?
Rational gamer shame. Now, this is kind of a great coming around because, Chris, when you were here in January of 2007, if you say that's true, we'll believe that's true. And it was said on Fear the Boot, so it now is true.
That's right. It's canon now.
If I have to, I'll go back and adjust the dates on the episodes because if it was actually like March of 2007 and I posted it in March of 2007, you were actually here in January and I posted it on the wrong date.
That's right.
Because you just said it here, so it is now true.
Because at Fear the Boot, we're always right.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's how it is important now.
So, yeah.
But when you were here, we did a bonus episode on gamer shame. And mostly we talked about, you know, we kind of laughed about gamer shame and talked about how to get around it. But you guys were kicking around that there's a forum thread that has kind of gotten you guys thinking about the fact that...
Welcome back to the forums, by the way.
Yeah, thank you.
Welcome back, Dan.
Yeah, it's been like 5 years now.
So. Yeah, it feels good to be back.
I kept your chair warm for you. And by keeping it warm for you, meaning I'm farting.
You farted a lot. Yeah, right. Excellent. That's pretty much where I thought that was headed. Mr. Peter Prostate had a lot to say about my chair. So
I'm also Corey Clean Colon. So
an active colon is a happy colon.
Someone ought to come out with like a frozen meal line
called Corey Colon.
Corey Clean Colon.
It's like prune juice.
It's nothing but fiber. Every box is like half a kilogram of fiber, and that's all it is. But anyway, you guys are kicking around that because of this forum thread that you're now thinking more about a rational gamer shame, that maybe gamer shame actually should exist and does have a place. And I was wondering if you guys would expound on that.
I think from my perspective, my opinion has changed a little bit. I know that I've always been kind of the, and again, I hate to use this word because it implies the wrong connotations, but I can't think of anything better. I'm very evangelical about people embracing what their hobby is, what they enjoy doing. And I come from that, from the fact that I enjoy it a lot. I have tremendous love for the hobby. It's a great time for me. It's been a great time for everybody I've been associated with. So I don't see anything wrong with telling people that, you know, this is what I'm into. Now, that doesn't mean that I, you know, jump up and down the hallways and saying, you know, gaming's awesome. And I, you know, bring my core books to work and all that kind of stuff. I don't do that.
Quick side question. Do you just have trouble saying evangelical because you're Catholic?
No, I don't have any problem with that at all. It does kind of give me the creeps a little bit, but, you know, that's all right. I was raised Lutheran, so I can kind of say it with, nice, you know, a little bit of a straight face. Anyway.
We're going to get some emails on that one.
Yeah. But if I'm asked, you know, what are you doing this weekend? I'll say, you know, I'm probably going to get together with some friends and play games. And then, you know, if it gets into that conversation as to what kind of games, I don't have any problem saying Dungeons and Dragons, Battletech, whatever the game is that I have to be playing. You know, and then if they ask, I'll continue to talk about it. And that's never bothered me. And so I guess because I feel that it's okay if I do that, I don't see any reason why anybody else should do that.
Yeah, I feel the exact same way. I mean, on the forums, we had this thing a while back where everyone was taking Myers-Briggs personality tests over the internet. And mine came back where it said that I'm the type of person where if I love something, I try to get everyone around me into that, what I'm into, because I want to share what I love so much. And like, I do want to evangelize it, you know, and I find that's true with gaming. I completely agree with you, Chris. I really want to talk about gaming. I want to get people excited about it. But on the other hand, you know, I don't carry a monster man.
A demon, a gnome with a demon staff with you?
No. I just carry this picture in my wallet, you know, or a little locket close to my heart. But
I do have my RPGA card in my wallet, though.
You people in the RPGA.
Well, that was when I was hot and heavy into it, though.
Yeah. Luke always whips that thing out when we're talking about, like, nerd street cred. Luke will whip out his RPGA card with a little dragon guy on it. And I'm like, you, I just...
And then I shoot him two or three times, and then we go back to gaming.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's like, oh, well.
And you're like, if you were a doctor, you'd know what to do about gunshot wounds, but...
Nah, you didn't shoot me in the eyes.
All right. But, so continue, but...
But yet on this forum thread... We, you know, got into kind of a discussion about that, and I can't remember the forum user, but he made the point where he works, it's not necessarily really a good thing for him to do because, quite frankly, the work environment is such that he could really open himself up to a lot of, you know, really, for lack of a better word, discrimination over his hobby because he doesn't fit the mold of what everyone else does around in his job. And, you know, in my job, being in marketing, I'm expected to be on the creative side, expected to be a little wacky and all that, you know, as far as that kind of stuff goes. So if I do something like this, people probably would see, oh, you know, that in some way makes sense. I guess I can see that. But on the other hand, it's also tempered by the fact that when people look at me and they hear about just my rather, you know, mundane family life, it kind of contrasts their stereotypical definition of what they think a gamer should be. And I think in that sense, I'm doing the hobby some good, but not everybody else has that type of environment where they can have it work, you know, work for them in that way. Right, and so that's kind of changed my perspective a little bit that maybe there indeed are some situations where it is worth it to not say anything because, yes, you know, people generally should accept you for who you are. And of course, all that. And everybody, you know, wears rainbows and rides unicorns.
I have that card game. Just so we can credit the right person here and stop referring to him as that forum user, I pulled up the forum real quick. And the guy to which we're referring is, and I'm going to mess this up, is Erasmuth or
Azermuth?
Erasmuth. It's A-R-A-Z-M-U-T-H.
Definitely not Assmouth.
No. Erasmuth is what I'm going to take as a stab at how to pronounce his name.
Like I was saying, I agree. I used to agree with Chris. You know, Chris and I used to be on the same page on this. You know, it's like, hey, it's your hobby. You shouldn't be ashamed of it. You know, you should, you know, get out there and talk about it. You know, people aren't ashamed of saying they're sports fans. Why should I be ashamed of my hobby? And you know what? I'm still not ashamed of it, but I see what this guy is saying. Like, I work for Scott Trade, and we do online stock trading. And we have different departments in the company, and the department I work in is IT, so I work around a lot of geeky guys. Not necessarily role players, but there are a few. And so I can talk about role playing and stuff, and other people are into, like, my boss is into comic books and whatnot, and, you know, there's some pretty geeky pursuits. But if I went over into another department, like the options trading department or the mutual funds department or the margin department, you know, it's all business guys in suits, it's a different culture. And I don't think that I would be fired or looked down upon, but I definitely think it would be what could be termed as a career-limiting move.
Exactly. There could very well be, you know, backroom talk about, oh yeah, Chad's a pretty good guy, but he does that weird stuff on the weekends, you know, and I don't know, man.
Yeah, he doesn't play golf and he doesn't drive a Lexus, but
even the backroom talk aside, I mean, it colors people's perceptions of mm-hmm. you, and it's going to change the way they interact with you. I know I've been at jobs where I have been passed over for promotions or opportunities that I was
That's
more.
That's because you walk around with like shotguns and AKs and stuff just into work.
This was actually, well, actually.
I bust a cap.
But just because of, at the time, it was because of my youth, because I started in the corporate world at a very young age. I was lucky enough or unlucky enough to skip over all the retail and food services stuff. And I started working an office job at like 19 or 20. And I can't tell you how many times where there was a job they damn well knew I was qualified for, but they skipped over me because of my age. And I think it's in human nature, or at least the nature of our culture, that when we see some kind of social injustice or what we perceive as social injustice, that we want to rise up and buck the system. But you know what? It's sad to say, but a lot of times in the end, the system wins.
Yeah.
And
do we really need an advocacy association for role players?
Right. And I
don't think we need one for people with long hair. I don't think we need one for, you know, fat people.
Well, I have such, I'll leave the fat people one alone, but I have such mixed feelings on it in general.
I know you leave them alone. You like them.
One thing I do want to say that too is that while I agree with you that, you know, the system is what it is, I think this is one of those times when change can be made from within the system. You know, and using myself again as an example, I present a very non-threatening face to what people's stereotypical definition of a gamer is. I'm married, I got four kids, I have a normal job, I conduct myself in a professional manner. I'm an acceptable square. And I think that when people see that, it works ever so slightly to change their perceptions. Now, there is one person at work, and I did comment further along in the thread about this. Every time we have talked about gaming, I sense a genuine uncomfortableness as if she doesn't really know exactly how to take this. You know, cause, and she'll give me a hard time because there was a Comic-Con recently, and I wasn't able to go, but I had said I had gone last year, taken two of my kids, we had a good time. But yet she still couldn't get over the hump thinking that, you know, comics are for somebody who's 12. You know, you shouldn't be doing this stuff. You're not 12 anymore. So clearly her perceptions are skewed. But yet at the same point in time, I'm trying to make her see that, you know, this is an acceptable hobby. And actually related to that, I have a question for you guys, since you guys do this much more than I do. Do you think the popularity of things like World of Warcraft, Second Life, and other MMOs really will do anything to actually kind of help that at all? Because I don't do these things at all, but...
No, because for the most part, the people to which I really have to have any kind of gamer shame, it's still older generations. It's...
our parents.
Yeah, you know, I wouldn't even just say our parents. I'd say it's really kind of the 30-plus crowd. Yeah. It's not the younger...
Wait. We're the 30-plus
crowd. I know. My point precisely. Oh, really? I mean, even my own peers, I have to be somewhat careful around, because they still carry that sort of stigma about any type of gaming. I remember growing up when even video gaming was something that only the super nerds did, that this was not something that everybody did, which obviously is radically different now. Yeah. But
very true. There's lots of guys who wear baseball caps and have a pinch of chew in their lips and play, you know, sports games.
Right, yeah. Exactly. But the point being that I don't think that the crowd that has been desensitized to gaming because of video gaming and because of anime and things like that is not the same crowd that carries this stigma against gaming to begin with. And so personally, no, I don't think it's done anything for it at all. I wish it had, but
I think that it, if anything, it hasn't done anything for the stigma, but it's expanded the pool. But you know what? I will say something about the stigma is that I think that there's definitely a nerd chic in our culture now. Back when Dan and I were in high school and junior high, we had to, and we tell this to people like John, and they're shocked that we had to hide the fact that we played video games like Super Mario Brothers and Legend of Zelda, things that today people are like, man, know your roots. I got T-shirts, and you know, hot chicks have T-shirts.
Yeah, about it. That have the Zelda life bar with two full hearts and one half heart.
Right, and they're really proud of it. And I think that's great. But back in the day, at least in Midwest St. Louis, conservative Missouri, in a high school full of Hoosiers, that was something that we couldn't stand up and say, "Oh yeah, I got the Master Sword in Legend of Zelda." You know, we get
it was
pounded.
The same way in Minnesota, and I may be a little older than you guys, and it was exactly the same way. You couldn't really own up to some of those things. You know, the guys who did play D&D, you know, and video game wise, we were still in the Atari 2600 generation. But the guys who played D&D, they were totally pigeonholed in that stereotype, and that was, you know, you just didn't bring that stuff up.
It's difficult because we want to rise up. We want to change the perceptions. We want to change what people think about this. It's kind of, you know, if we don't do anything to change it, who will? But at the same time, is it worth it for a hobby? We're not talking about a religion. We're not talking about a race.
For me,
we're talking about just gaming. Is it really worth jeopardizing a job or
the... For me, in my life, absolutely yes, because my boss is a big dork and he reads comic books and stuff, and there are guys in my office who theorize that I got placed in the cubicle right next to him So he has someone to talk to about dorky stuff instead of being surrounded by sports fans.
Well, it's like
being and you know what? That only helps me.
Right. It's like being a race rights guy at Berkeley. I mean, it's not exactly a struggle to get through.
But then again, I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a businessman. I'm not someone like that.
Yeah, I guess being self-employed, I don't any longer obviously deal with that in the workplace.
Being self-employed, it's the same thing as being unemployed, only you get a paycheck.
Yeah, exactly. But I will say, though, that in previous jobs that it was something that I kept on the down low. I didn't lie about it, but I definitely did not walk into work and talk about role-playing games. I was very careful about what I said.
Well,
when I reserved the convention center for Fear the Con, St. Louis as a whole, it's a fairly conservative liberal mix, but the area I live in is very, very, very conservative. It's an old farming community that in the past 10 years has turned into suburbs.
Everybody walks around with overhauls.
And
let me put to you this way, down the road, they have Ronald Reagan Boulevard.
And well, that's a little bit further west. Point being, that's the kind of area where I live. So when I went to rent the place at the park for Fear the Con, the ladies asked me a question I wasn't ready for, which is, what is this for? And I seriously was like, hey, for the next word phrase that comes out of my mouth is role playing games. They're going to come up with a reason not to rent it to me.
Yeah.
And so I had to come up with some other way. I found I won't lie. I have a huge ethical thing against being deceitful. So I just said, well, it's for gaming. Well, that threw them off because gaming
is poker and craps.
Well,
that's what they're thinking.
Gaming is a euphemism all over the place. I thought it was just a Missouri thing, but it's all over the place for gambling. So they're like, well, we don't allow gambling. And I'm like, no, I mean tabletop gaming. And so, well, do you mean like board games? And I'm like, yeah, it could include board games. Yeah, and that's true. And I said, there are things more complex than that. But yeah, it's kind of like board game. And they said, oh, okay, that sounds kind of interesting. And we left it at that. I wasn't going to lie to them, but I had to think about how I'm going to phrase that.
There's nothing wrong with that. And you talked about this before, and I remember that. And really, there's nothing wrong with it at leaving it right at that. You don't need to go into any deeper explanation than that. You really don't. It's it's kind of like that, like we do. And then let them do that and think, oh, you know what? That's kind of fun. Good for them.
And you know what? Anything beyond that, they probably just don't even care. As in, they don't want to hear about it. And they don't care that you're doing it.
Yeah, and I think I also get some kind of don't ask, don't tell, because I've mentioned on this podcast before, I teach on Sunday mornings. It should not take a genius to figure out what it is I'm teaching on Sunday mornings. So, not to get into a religious thing, but I teach a Sunday school class.
Oh, here, I'm thinking, I thought it was hairstyles.
Hair care. I don't, my hair requires no style. I wake up, I brush it, and it's perfect.
Your hair is style.
Yeah.
It is. But it's really difficult because I know I sit up there and it's hard as you teach anything not to talk somewhat about yourself or the anecdotes of your life. And gaming is a big part of my life. This podcast, which is about gaming, is a really big part of my life. When I miss a Sunday and have to have somebody substitute for me, most of the time it's because I'm going to a gaming convention.
Yeah.
And so
you game on Sundays with us.
Yeah, I game on Sundays, Sunday afternoons with the group that Chad's in. But it's really difficult because these people know that I'm kind of doing something that I don't think there's anything spiritually or scripturally wrong with it. Mm-hmm. There's, now that I've looked for it, or really not looked for it, it's just kind of found me. I've come to find out there's a large group of Christian gamers.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, this is still not something that your typical baby boomer or senior citizen who's been raised in a farming community Baptist church is going to want to hear.
Right.
And I have to exercise some kind of a gamer shame there just because, once again, I'd like to see these stigma changed. I'll do what I can to change it, but I don't know that I'm willing to throw away a job or a standing within the community or have to spend the next 3 Sundays explaining why role-playing games aren't sending me to hell.
Yeah.
Over something that really is just a hobby.
Yeah, like you said, we're not talking about civil rights. This is not a civil
right. It's not
constitutional issue.
It's not
here.
Like I can't vote because I'm a gamer, or I can't own property because I'm a gamer, or whatever. It's, we're not getting into that kind of territory.
gamer suffrage.
Well, you know, that's really what it comes down to. It comes down to that personal decision and how you feel it works best in your situation. You know, and I'm kind of with Chad, you know, we can kind of close this out with this, but it helped me, I feel it helped me get the job I got, you know,
right?
Because I went in there, I brought samples in of the RPG books that either I have written or contributed to give an example. Hey, this is my level of writing. This shows I can meet deadlines. This shows I have creative ideas. This shows that, you know, I can handle larger jobs. And, you know, I feel that it did help me. And but in other people's case, no, it may not necessarily help them.
Right. And I think, Chris, throughout the course of this conversation, you've hit on the two big things that if you want to change people's opinion of gaming, the best way to do it is, number one, don't come off as a freak.
And shove it in their face and bore them to death.
Recite from Aarakocra to Zombie backwards. But I mean, gamer cops pull you over and I need you to recite the Monstrous Manual from Zombie to Aarakocra.
Oh, man. But I don't even have my dice on me. I'm so screwed.
Please walk 3 squares in a straight line.
If you scatter more than 1d6 hexes in any direction, then
you're going to have to roll your intimidate on that pig.
But anyway, I think the two things is, one, don't come off as a complete freak, that understand that you are, to some degree, literally the face of the hobby. And then secondly, think
what
about
a face.
Well, think about Abraham Lincoln had a great saying. Someone accused him of being two-faced. He said, if I had two faces, do you think I'd be wearing this one? And but the second thing is, then think about how you take it across to people. Think about where it needs to be brought up and how you can bring it across such that it's not going to bug people. So, alrighty, our main topic for today, I don't want to say our bigger topics, these probably be about equal in length, is something that I got to thinking about. Actually, we have started up our Age of Conan Guild, and I'll put a link to that in our show notes if you're interested in joining us on that. Tons of fun. Fair warning, this is a mature rated game. You can turn off some of the gore and nudity, but just fair warning, this is a mature rated game, but I'm having a ton of fun playing it. Because when I for a long time went back and forth between WoW and EQ2, and there's things I loved about both. I'm like, you know, I wish somebody would make a game that has the best qualities of each. And that's what Age of Conan is. It's a shameless ripoff of the best qualities of WoW and EQ2.
Only it's bigger, badder, and more naked.
Exactly. So, but yes. If you're interested in trying this game out, definitely look us up, hook up with our guild.
Believe it or not, I actually had this conversation with Dan for the first time in the 25 years I've known him. I came up to him in the game and I'm like, Dan, have you seen your boobs yet? And he's like, no. And I'm like, well, let's see your boobs. Show me your boobs.
Because my main character's male, but my alt is a female. And so he was like, Chad rolled up a new character, so I have my alt still parked on the newbie island. And he's like, have you undressed your character? I'm like, no, actually, I really haven't to this point because I've been focusing on my main so much. But so anyway, but what this got us to thinking about was not nudity.
What?
That's not the point we're going to discuss here air. But what it got me thinking about was, there was a debate coming up to this, and we had the same debate back when we were playing WoW, was should we play on a PvE? And for those of you who don't play these online games, PvE is an abbreviation for player versus environment. It basically means you fight computer-controlled monsters, but generally do not fight other players. And if you do, it's always in a consensual, controlled manner, like you guys both flagged yourselves for player fights and you knew you were walking into it or something to that effect.
Care Bears.
Right.
Of which I am one.
Yeah.
I prefer PvE.
I am a Care Bear as well. I greatly prefer PvE. Or play on a PvP server, which is
what our guild is in.
Player versus player.
Yeah.
Where at any given moment, you can attack anyone else that you see in the world. All you have to do is just walk up and start swinging your sword. And there are people that have very strong opinions both ways, and they have their reasons. And so there was a little mini debate before we picked which server we were going to be on. And even now that we're on one, there's still kind of a mini debate between the people that are happy we're on PvP and the people that wish we had gone PvE instead. Fortunately, most people are just getting along and accepting that, hey, you know, can't make everybody happy, and we're the guild's still working out great. But what this got me thinking about was the fact that we make similar choice in tabletop role-playing games, because I have been in games that have been anywhere between two extremes. On one hand, the GM does not even like the characters arguing, that it's we all get along and hold hands and sing kumbaya, to on the other far extreme, the intention of the game is that only one of these characters is going to survive. That is the stated objective of the game, that you might have mutual enemies, but in addition to your mutual enemies, everyone in the party is out to get you.
Right.
And I've played everything in between, where there's some bickering, no bickering.
You just played all games ever.
That's right. If there's ever been a game right, and you've run it.
I was channeling Luke there for a moment. Before you saw that. Yeah.
Woo! I'm a doctor. But
I'm a doctor.
But it got me thinking about, and I think, yeah, I know over the 2 years that we have run the show that we have talked on and off about the degree of conflict that we allow. We've given some reasons about this, but I don't know that we have ever really talked about the ups and downs and ins and outs of deciding on a level of conflict you're going to allow amongst the players in the game, or should I say characters. If the players are fighting, you have a new problem.
Yeah.
So assuming that we're talking about characters here.
Yeah. The assumption of the whole discussion is that everybody will get along around the table.
Right. And how do you pick that level? How do you run that level? And then what are the possible ups and downs you could run to with each
I've been in both games. Like my current group and the group I had before this, two totally different styles of gaming. Like the group I had before this one was very much party conflict. They wanted internal conflict. They wrote it into the stories. They wanted me to support it, and I did happily. And then the group I'm in now is very, very much anti-party conflict. It is everybody is on the same page. No one will backstab each other. And in fact, I even tested the waters with that with my current group. I seem to remember people telling me that Luke just jokingly blasted me in one of the episodes. And since I don't
for the Deadlands game where you lied Deadlands to the game. Party.
Yeah, exactly. And I have no clue what he says. I don't listen to the podcast, so I have no clue what he said. But, you know, from my perspective on that, what I was doing was I was testing the limits of the party. I had come from this group where lying, not, you know, to people, but the characters right. lying to each other was encouraged and internal conflict was encouraged. So I had this opportunity for my character to lie, to trick the party. And so I did. I wanted to see how that would go. And it went over like a lead balloon. I mean, I was shocked. Like, it wasn't even like, huh, what is he doing? Oh, that's a little weird. Let's try and go with it. Or maybe we should. No, it was just like I did it and the entire room went silent. All eyes on me. All jaws hit the floor. And somebody's like, you just lied. And I'm like, yeah, I did. And I'm like, oh, rah, 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 rah. And
I don't know if there's a profanity in that or not.
I'll leave that to the listener to decide.
I heard nothing in mind.
So the guys were like, they were trying to figure out how to deal with it. And I think what happened was Luke misinterpreted the situation. He thought that I wanted to go off story. Not, man, we joke about railroad. Every time he brings it up, I'm like, choo choo, get me back on the railroad, Luke. But, you know, to kind of go off task more and follow my own character's desires. And truly, I could care less. What I wanted out of it was I wanted to generate a conflict role-playing situation where I lie to the party and then the party role-plays out talking to me, being suspicious of me, figuring out that I lied, and then bringing it back around to where Luke wanted it. But they don't do that in that group. And that's not a problem, but that's not what they do. And then it turned into Luke said, okay, roll your persuasion. I don't have a persuasion skill. Well, it's, you know, D4 minus 10,000, and, you know, it's automatic failure, and boom, I failed it, and he's like, oh, you didn't do it, and so you didn't lie, and don't do that again. And it's,
you know,
just
I think
like,
right there is the first good rule of thumb, which is know your players. And
right,
we've used
right.
this as a rule of thumb for I don't know how
Not
many
even,
things.
Whether a GM or even if you're a player, know the people around
because
you.
Yeah. You've got to know what they can tolerate, because I said when we were starting this off, you want to keep the characters in conflict, not the players.
Right.
And when you hit a point where the players are angry at each other, this is supposed to be fun. You have ruined the game. I don't
right.
care how good the plot is or how good anything is.
Oh, and I totally
if the players
did.
Are angry with each other. And that was one of the things that kept me from introducing a lot of conflict in previous games, was I had some people in the group, and I'll happily say, myself included, that had a very, very low tolerance for open hostility within the group. And I knew that, okay, I'm okay with the characters having some personality clashes or bickering about some things, because that just adds color to it. But if there's something like there's a guy in the party who's stealing out of the bag of another party member, or they're screwing each other over or framing each other for crimes or something really big.
I want to play in that group. That's awesome.
I knew this would spill over into the players would be angry. And so we would have to stop.
Yeah. You need to know your players. You need to have that level of trust in your players, because really, you know, party conflict like that can present, you know, some of the best role-playing opportunities. You know, when you have players who have characters who either A, have different goals, you know, definitely different personalities, but yet because of whatever the circumstances are, they're thrust into this group and they have to work together, you eventually get that rub. And it's times like that when the game master can sit back and really kind of enjoy and watch as they go through the situation. You know, one of the examples that we talked about before was, or earlier, was you've caught this criminal and you're in the wilderness. Well, one character wants to bring him to the local baron to have justice put through. But because of the situation, other characters saying, we can't afford this baggage. Let's just execute some field justice and let's try him ourselves and do this. And then you get into large debates about, you know, the rightness or wrongness of that. And it becomes very interesting to see exactly who ends up giving in those situations.
Well, and it's a great role playing in general, because in real life, even best friends don't always agree.
Right.
Assuming you're not creating tension, once again, amongst the players. And so I agree with you. I think that disagreement has created some of the best role-playing situations in the games I've been in.
Mm-hmm.
I think the important thing, or one of the ways you can head a lot of this off, in addition to know your players, is set the expectations. If I walk into a gaming group and I know it's a combative, conflicting group, I will create a very different kind of character, and I have emotionally very different kinds of expectations than I do otherwise.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing that I can take people I've gamed with in the past where they want games where there's very, very minimal party conflict. When we play video games, we only play in cooperative mode. We don't ever play competitively. And once again, I personally enjoy that. I'd rather fight the challenge of what can we build together than what can we do to destroy each other.
I totally agree. Personally, I want conflict in my role-playing game, and I want cooperation in my video games.
Right.
It's really, really weird.
But it's if I sit down and I know I can handle it. If you tell me walking into a game that, look, this group, they fight with each other, they steal from each other, it gets a little annoying because I'm constantly have to be paranoid, or it's like every time I tell them my character's taking a nap, it's like I'm taking a nap on top of my backpack, and I've got this alarm spell cast, or this electronic alarm if it's a sci-fi game, blah, and it gets a little agitating, but I can at least deal with it. The games where I've really gotten mad is where when I sat down and we thought it was going to be one type of game and ended up being the other, usually in the direction of conflict.
And usually what happens then is that you have one character who is based, or one player who's the jackass. He might not even be malicious about it, but I mean, well, same thing with the Deadlands game in the example. It's just like, that was my fault. I put the brakes on it, and then it's just like, okay, I'll scale that back a little.
I think that's, you know, brings up another point about that is, as a player, you have to learn, you know, to take that step back. And I think that part of the problem is you get a certain level of emotional investment. I remember, and this was very somewhat early on in my gaming career, and I was over at one of my good friend's house, and we were role playing, and we were being bandits, and my character kind of came into this little group after it had already been established, and I went in there thinking that, hey, great, you know, I'm going to sit down and play, we're going to have a good time, we're going to roll some dice, it's going to be awesome. And what ended up happening is that one of the NPCs that I came in with, I woke up in the middle of the night to find him dead with my friend's character standing over him and then looking at me very threateningly and basically threatening me to leave the group. And I ended up taking that really personally, and I was actually kind of hurt by the whole thing because I thought, wait a second, what are you doing? We're just sitting here trying to have some fun, you know, but yet he was really getting into the spirit of what was happening. And because of my emotional investment in my character and in what was happening and not going into it, knowing what could end up happening, you know, I personally end up getting kind of hurt by the whole thing and that game eventually ended up getting kind of scrapped just because it was so, it just really threw me off. And it's, you know, so you have to learn to kind of take that step back and realize that what you're doing and not have such a deep emotional investment in what's going on.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think you've got to look at both ends of that, because on one side, I would put a certain amount of weight on the person causing the conflict to say, wait a minute, is it really necessary to be this into it to ruin somebody else's fun? But conversely, someone like on my end, and I've been in the same situation you've been in, Chris, where people will do something in the game and I will take it very personally, because to me, I didn't take the Myers-Briggs thing. I've taken it several times. I usually get STFU or something like that. But but
I almost said that out loud.
Yeah. Well, one of my big personal things, one of my the virtues I take very seriously in life is loyalty. I'm an extremely loyal person. I will go to the ends of the earth very selflessly for somebody, but I expect that out of people in return. And that's probably a, I don't know, in a sad sort of way, a maladjustment of mine. But when I sit there and play a game, I get the same thing, that if somebody's like, I've got something else and they're robbing me or killing me or framing me for something or using me as cannon fodder, that it's kind of the same thing. I'm like, wait a minute, you're my friend. Even if our characters aren't, you're my friend. Why are you hurting me? And I guess to some degree, you know, I need to learn to take a step back and accept that this is a game, just as the other person needs to take a step back and say, wait a minute. The first and foremost goal when we sit down to play a role-playing game, it's not even role-playing. It's having fun.
Right.
I mean, we've talked about before that, look, if the game ain't working, go out and bowl and have some beers and enjoy yourself.
Beer.
Because the point is to have fun. And if you're ruining somebody else's fun, you have destroyed the entire point of this get-together.
You know, and I think as time goes on, you know, and as we age and, you know, we develop more things going on in our real life, the escapism and the enjoyment you get in the hobby becomes more important. And if your frequency of gaming goes down, it becomes even more important. And so I think, yeah, having that those initial conversations you had mentioned about, you know, making sure everyone knows exactly what you're going to be getting into going into it, help can help a lot. Because one of the worst feelings to have is if you've had, you know, a tough week at work and now you're all psyched to game on the weekend because you get that escapism, you get to have that good time, and the gaming session ends up becoming worse than what your week was at work, you just leave it frustrated. It leaves a very sour taste in your mouth.
Yes, absolutely. I almost think that maybe one of these days I should go back and revise the group template, because not that necessarily this is a...
Well, not that you are ever wrong, well, mind you.
Well,
No.
I'm just forever getting more right.
Exactly. It's addition of more facts.
Exactly. It's like right. Dividing...
newly revealed information.
Right, exactly. This is additional revelation. But I wonder if almost on the group template you should have as part of that, what is the acceptable level of conflict? Because I think that you can head off a lot of this by setting up front what everyone's expectations are. How much conflict do they want? Do they like it? Do they dislike it? Is it going to really bother them personally? And maybe set that up front and add that to the group template so it's done explicitly. So when you guys are sitting around at the very first imaginings of your characters, you know, okay, I'm in a group of people where they don't want to have a lot of conflict, so I got to make a guy who's going to get along with everybody and it's not going to be liar manipulative or vice versa. This is a party where it's going to be very cutthroat. But everybody coming into this knows that. It's on the group template. We've all talked about it. We've all come to some kind of consensus on it. We have an equal expectation and you can play that. You know, thinking, Chad, we talked about, I believe last show you were on, we talked about in Paul's group how the introduction of role-playing there. But that was also really where I got my introduction to party conflict, because in the other group there was not much party conflict. I mean, there might be some,
there wasn't much role-playing either,
right?
But
so therefore there wasn't much party conflict. The most conflict we got was disputes over plans,
who got to fire the gun,
or the guy's in jail, or how are we going to break him out, those kinds of things. But one of the things they used to do, as I recall, and I don't think I've actually played one of these because they stopped doing them by the time I had joined the group, was they would play the game and there was a moderate level of conflict. They were stabbing each other in the back and ripping each other off, but they weren't generally killing each other.
Right.
So it's kind of this moderate tamp level of aggression. But every so often they would stop and do this kind of what if sort of mini game that had no bearing on the role playing game, where every person would be dumped, like all the characters would be dumped in this arena that the game master had drawn up that had multi levels and all this stuff going on. It had traps. It had items you could find because like you'd be stripped of all your equipment or something to that effect. And it was a, let's say there's four people. It's a four way blind where everyone takes a turn. It's like, okay, you're in a room and here's three doors. Which way do you go? Okay, I walk into this room. Well, roll the save because there might be a trap there, or you find a shotgun laying on the floor. And it was a kind of a, oh, what was the running man or whatever sort of game, except played between the characters where they got out all of that aggression and all that angst and all that penis measuring and then got back to the real game, which had a more, and it was a, this whole thing, you know, they treated it as if it just had never happened.
Right.
And then got back into the real game. But they were okay with that because the expectation up front, everyone knew walking into it, the intention is to kill each other.
Yeah.
And nobody's that emotionally invested in it because, okay, of course, everybody wants to win. That's human nature. Mm-hmm. But it's not going to reflect on the game. You're not going to lose any gear or hit points or whatever once the actual game starts up again. And so it's people accepted that.
Mm-hmm.
Has anyone here had a game where there was a massive level of party conflict that never spilled out of character?
Oh, yeah.
Where there was, like, I mean, murder and theft and...
Yeah,
the players were laughing about it.
The old group I had, I ran, and I've talked about this on the show before. I wish John were here, where we played a homebrew cyberpunk setting and a cyberpunk game. Not a Shadowrun, no magic or anything, like just straight up.
That's
like,
right. One guy was playing the AI that was out.
John was playing the AI, and it was the intention was everybody was working together, and I was going to introduce John's character, and they were going to kind of liberate slash rescue him, and then he was going to be part of the group as an AI, and it got to the point where when they were coming to get him, John's character, and rightly so because of some of the actions of the group, mainly Phil was in there, so viewed it as they were coming not to get him but to get him. And so he defended himself, and for the next five or six games it was the party versus John. I took my plot and threw it out the window. It was awesome. But it ended. I mean, it couldn't go on and on and on like that because it would get... not necessarily because people would start hating each other, hating John, but because it would be really boring. There's no story.
Yeah.
And...
Exactly. I mean, yeah, I don't think
it was neat scenes.
Well, right. I mean, we've all played board games, and I'm not even talking about the complex one. We've all played games like Monopoly or Life or whatever and enjoyed them. But I don't think any one of us would really want
the Life campaign.
Yeah, a campaign. I mean, there's some point where
twins,
you want,
I've got twins.
You want somebody to cross the finish line and for the damn thing to be over.
No, there's no retirement center. It's like the parents die and the kids
reincarnate.
Move up to the front seat. It's the lineage game.
You reincarnate and start over.
When they die, the government takes like, you know, estate tax and you lose money, but you keep carrying on. Oh, what a terrible game of Life that would be. Oh, wait, that's reality.
Yeah, they don't have on the Life game, they don't have, you know, wife cheats on you or something, or home robbed.
Home robbed.
Conscription reintroduce, lose one child.
I think the biggest problem I've had with any kind of a PvP game is the fact that it always does degenerate into problems around the table, but I realize that's largely due to the people I'm playing with. But, you know, something else that strikes me as that would be an issue, and I'm curious if you guys, having more experience with this, have ever successfully resolved this, which is if you have a group, which hopefully had some kind of a template to begin with or some kind of a common theme to begin with, there's some reason they're walking together, and out of six people, three are alive and three are dead, and you have to keep reintroducing new characters. At some point, doesn't that break the plot or stretch credulity? Or at some point, does somebody really start to ask, you know, why am I joining up with this guy who's habitually been murdering his friends? Or
yeah, I find that anytime you have to introduce a new character, doesn't even have to be a dead character, and the player comes in playing a new guy. Could be somebody is introduced in the middle of an ongoing campaign. I always find that there's a little bit of shoehorning, and I've played games where I've worked it in and kind of with the plot. And then there's other times where I sat down with the group before we started. I say, okay, here's Joe. Joe's playing this character. Can we all just assume that Joe was there all along.
Yeah. This is going to be like a bad sitcom.
Yeah.
We're just going to pretend that this guy has always been there, even though we have never seen him before.
What did we call it?
Like from Chuck from Happy Days.
From Paul's group, we called it Bamfing In.
Yeah, Bamfing after Nightcrawler. Yeah, his teleportation sound effect.
Everyone's suspension of disbelief as to what's happening does kind of have to, you know, become a bit stronger at that particular point in time. But, you know, I agree with Chad. Yeah, there is some shoehorning that goes on in there. But I think that if you work it into the plot, you know, it can be successful enough after, say, the first session or two to where everyone just kind of accepts it that this is what's going on. You know, and that with my last full campaign that I ran, I went through, I think, at least half a dozen players and characters as people shuffled in and out over the last, you know, over the 2-year course of the campaign. But it was just something you just had to do, and it worked out pretty well.
I guess, so once again, if you want a conflict heavy game, you've got to think this through ahead of time. This is something you're going to have to deal with, that once somebody gets killed, you've got to bring another character in. And if you're not real thick on the RP, then okay, then fine. The last wizard's dead at the next town. You pick up a new wizard to round out the party. But if you're thick into the RP and you're playing a sci-fi game where you guys are all out there and you've got your own little freighter, and all of a sudden you've just blown somebody out of an airlock and you show up at the next space station, sans a crew member, how many times can you replace
how many times in a party versus party game where there's internal conflict, what happens if the same guy keeps getting killed? Yeah, you know, what do you do? Or actually a different question than I have, because to me that's just you have to deal with that outside the game. My question is, what do you do when you have this kind of game where there's conflict and you have, like, say, five guys and four guys want the internal conflict and one guy does not? What do you do?
Man, I don't know.
That one guy, he'd almost have to either he just accept it or leave, because I mean it's kind of becomes a majority rules at that point.
Well, I think the one way I would spin that is, it's generally been my observation that if you take someone who's really big into the party infighting and you take that away from them, they might grumble a little, but it doesn't really ruin their fun. But if you take someone,
I can say that you're exactly right on that end, because my current game, no party infighting.
Yeah.
I'm big into party conflict. I'm still having fun, I just don't conflict.
John's the same way. Yeah. I've seen him, and he loves party conflict, but I've put him in games, or played with him in games. I put him in games. I only GM'd like one game for him. But I've played with him in games where there was no party conflict, and he seems to adjust to that, as opposed to you take the person who can't handle it, who takes it personally, who gets upset about it, who is really invested in that character you just blew out the airlock, and they're probably going to get...
I love space and fools.
You put the upset-o-meter, you know, the PvPers losing their player versus player might be at a 2. This guy might be at a 10.
Yeah.
And I guess there's other options, too. Like, you can just make a compromise to say, look, we're going to have it, but you know what? The first and foremost, we're here to have fun. We're here to be friends. And so if these four guys want it and this fifth guy doesn't, for the sake of fun, you four guys can do it. Fifth guy's he's just off limits. Leave him alone. Don't steal his stuff. Don't stab him.
You can even make it a plot thing. You can make him in the plot untouchable, where if you're playing a fantasy game, he's the king's right-hand man.
Yeah.
You know, as long as
this is the guy you've been hired to deliver safely somewhere.
Or this is the team sort of diplomat. You know, everybody's always at each other's throat, but this is the guy who brings calm and peace.
Or he's hired you all. He's the one that gets the paychecks and divvies out money the pay man. Or something like that. But you could even write it into the team template to explain why this guy's off limit, and then just make an agreement outside, outside of the game. Say, look,
the outside agreement is very, very important.
Right. Just say, look, Bob doesn't like having his character killed. You guys want to do it. So just Bob's not going to bug your characters in return. You guys don't bug his, and fight away otherwise, and let it go like that. I've never played in a game where that's been done.
Me neither.
I don't see any reason why it couldn't be done.
I would actually love to run a game like that just to see how well it would go. Yeah.
Do it as a little petri dish experiment and see what happens.
Actually, that team template intrigues me, of having, you know, we'll say five guys. You have four guys who are at each other's throats or something, and then you have one guy who he's the peacemaker. They would kill each other if not for him, and he just you know, it's like, okay, Joe, you know, you're pissed off at him, and, you know, and he's like some diplomat type thing.
I've seen that kind of occur subconsciously, but never by design.
Yeah.
Because I can remember even being in games myself, like when I joined Paul's group, that after the first couple games I was there, when it became fairly clear that the party infighting kind of agitated me, people didn't mess with me the way they were messing with each other.
Right.
And but once again, it was never by design. There was nothing about my character.
You were the new guy, and
it could also be a situation where that one guy plays, you know, the Ming the Merciless type of person to the other characters, Prince Vulton and Prince Baron, where he essentially kind of, you know, secretly plays them off against each other.
I know, Chris, that was a lot of Flash Gordon in one sentence.
You know what? You can never have too much Flash Gordon.
Oh.
Quarterback, New York Jets.
I love you, Flash, but we only have 3 hours to save the world.
Okay, then I think that's going to wrap it up for this show. So thank you guys for tuning in, and we will catch you next time.
See ya.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2008, fully owned by its hosts. Our theme song was written and performed by Tim White. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com.